Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Testing the USMCA. Workers reject an offer from GM in Mexico. What does a worker shortage mean? How about higher wages? In many cases, I might add. And today on the show, the latest from the American Legion and the Alliance for Retired Americans. Welcome to the Friday, August 20th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. Jeff Stoffer is going to be our first guest on the show. Jeff is the head of media and communications at the American Legion, handles the American Legion magazine. If you are a subscriber, you should be getting your edition shortly. And a couple of stories we're going to get into. Number one, the story that everybody in the world is talking about, and that is Afghanistan. And the latest on that, you just go to legion.org, and on there, you will see a salute to our Afghanistan veterans from the National Commander, James W. Bill Oxford. And he talks about the takeover by the Taliban, and he points out, let me be 100% clear, the sacrifice, commitment, and work by all our men and women in uniform these past 20 years was worth it. They kept our nation safe when many feared another attack. They brought evildoers to justice. They delivered hope to war-torn nations. Their courage, victories, and selfless acts of service will not be washed away by history. And he goes on to say that it's important that American Legion family members take this time and perform buddy checks on not just Afghanistan, but Iraq and other veterans during this time. You think about this. A lot of vets that serve there are scratching their heads saying, was it worth it? Why did I go there? It's important they get all the support that they can right now. Jeff is also going to talk about, and this is in the September edition, a new generation of veterans. And he talks about the past 20 years and the all-volunteer force and how they have carved out a place in history. And when you look at the numbers on this, in the past two decades since 9/11, more than 3 million U.S. servicemen and women have risen to the challenge of their generation, deployed to Afghanistan, Iraq, and other so-called theaters of conflict. Other issue we're going to get into, this is a really good article, Poised to Soar. This past June marked 77 years since veterans of the greatest generation returned home to pursue college degrees using education benefits through the Servicemen's Readjustment Act of 1944. You know what that is? The GI Bill. The GI Bill. Today, on the heels of the 20th anniversary of 9/11, nearly 1 million Americans, 1 million, are pursuing degrees using their GI Bill benefits. And those who just graduated have faced adversity and uncertainty during the pandemic, but stand ready to succeed in the post-COVID workforce. And the article points out, when the pandemic struck, more than 500,000 student vets faced a loss of GI Bill benefits. Why? Due to the sudden transition to online classes. Well, within 10 days of discovering what happened, the Student Veterans of America worked with Congress to pass several protections that kept them in school. Isn't that bizarre? Just because they went online, all of a sudden, the benefits didn't kick in. These are the minutiae that are left out of legislation when they pass legislation. So it's a good thing that they fixed that with the Legion's help. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show, and he's got a lot to talk about. Number one, he was very close to Rich Trumka. They worked in the same building, just a couple floors apart. And he's going to reflect on Rich briefly, who passed away 2 weeks ago yesterday from a massive heart attack. The alliance is also applauding President Biden's remarks of last week, calling for Congress to take action to lower drug prices by allowing Medicare to negotiate a better deal with the wealthy, and I mean wealthy, pharmaceuticals. He says having the president so personally involved in this fight is a significant and welcome development. The alliance is also strongly supporting capping the amount that Medicare beneficiaries must spend out of pocket each year. Really good idea. And thirdly, a recent poll of voters age 65 and above has found that 87% of seniors, and we're talking Republicans, Democrats, and independents, everybody, 87% overwhelmingly support allowing Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices. That has been forbidden since they added Part D, going back to 2003, I believe. That's when George W. Bush negotiated that whole deal with Part D. And that all has to do with the amazing lobbying that the pharmaceuticals are able to do. I mean, one of the biggest lobby groups, not just in the United States, but in the world. So Rich Fiesta will button up the show with us. Well, yesterday morning, this is interesting, Mexico's labor ministry announced that workers at one of General Motors' largest pickup plants voted 3,214 to 2,623. So that's what, about a 600 vote margin to reject their union's CBA, their collective bargaining agreement. The vote carried out under the rules of the new United States Mexico Canada Agreement, USMCA or NAFTA 2.0, was widely seen as a critical test case for the agreement's unprecedented labor rights protections, which compelled Mexico to rewrite its existing labor code in order to root out the country's dominant company unionism model in favor of genuine workplace democracy. This is huge because it has not happened until that was renegotiated. Catherine Tai is the U.S. trade rep who formally requested that Mexican authorities investigate union election practices at the Silao-based plant in what amounted to the first labor rights complaint filed under the USMCA's Rapid Response Labor Mechanism after receiving reports of fraud in the plant's CBA ratification vote. The leader of the incumbent Miguel Lopez Trujillo Union, an affiliate of the company-friendly Confederation of Mexican Workers, were accused of destroying unused ballots and refusing to hand over results to federal officials as required under those reforms. Well, under an agreement reached by the two unions last month, Mexico would proctor a new ratification vote by today. And it happened this week, with both federal and international observers. Failure to comply with the terms of the new election would result in U.S. tariffs as high as 25% for the plant, which, by the way, produces over a third of the world's Chevy Silverados and GMC Sierras. Those are big ticket items. I mean, a Silverado will cost you $50,000, $60,000. And they're made in Mexico. Come on, GM. Despite earlier reports of continued worker intimidation, the election itself took place largely without incident and is being called a success. No doubt about that. You might have heard this week President Biden announced that all nursing homes must require employees to be vaccinated in order to continue to receive federal funding. Well, the new requirements will apply to around 15,000 nursing home facilities all around the country that take part in either Medicare or Medicaid programs, and it will affect about 1.3 million workers. Responding to the announcement, nursing homes predicted widespread staffing shortage shortages as many employees remain steadfast in refusing the vaccine. And this is despite over 1.4 million COVID-19 infections and some 187,000 COVID-related deaths in U.S. nursing homes. Turns out about 60% of nursing home employees are vaccinated as of last week. We talked about this on the show earlier this month with Jenny Deem. Jenny was a reporter from ProPublica, and she brought this to light. That show's archived on awfradio.com. Just go to the website, and you could listen to what she uncovered. 40% of the employees in nursing homes in America are not vaccinated. And you think about somebody that wants to send their loved one to a nursing home. Would you want to do that? Governments and businesses are scrambling to attract workers. This has been going on for months now. Well, check this out. New Mexico has pledged $5 million in federal pandemic relief to subsidize wages for pickers and workers at chili processing plants, raising the wages as high as $19.50 an hour. Werner Enterprises has asked the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration for exemptions from the commercial learner's permit requirements in order to hasten the process of getting new drivers behind the wheel. CVS dropped its requirement that entry-level job candidates have a high school diploma, and they raised their starting wage from $11 to $15 an hour by next summer. CVS, I suggest you do that now. Don't wait till next summer. Walmart has promised bonuses to warehouse workers for staying on the job. Chipotle is raising hourly wages, and they have implemented referral bonuses. While McDonald's is funneling millions of dollars to its franchisees to raise wages and has piloted an emergency child care program. Target is promising to pay the cost of college education for part-time and full-time workers if the students attend a qualifying institution. Labor shortage, wages go up. No doubt about that. All right, quick break. Jeff Stouffer, the American Legion, coming up next.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And you can check us out on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the United Labor Agency. You can find more at ulagency.org. The United Labor Agency celebrating 50 years this year. Let's go to line number one. Welcome one of our regulars, Mr. Jeffrey Stouffer of the American Legion magazine. He handles media and communications, and boy, he has been busy, busy, busy on several fronts. We're getting ready to commemorate the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and here we are with Afghanistan A salute to our Afghanistan vets. You definitely got to check that out on the Legion page, legion.org. A lot of folks that serve there scratching their heads wondering, why did I go there? Why did I go there? And it's important to do those buddy checks, and we'll get into that as well. Hey, Jeff, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Great to be with you, Flash. Thanks for having me.
So let's get into it. We're on the verge here of commemorating a horrible time in American history. I mean, you think about what happened on December 7th, 1941. This is right up there, 9/11. September 11th, 2001, America's turning point. And here we are, 20 years later, taking troops out of Afghanistan. Not a pretty picture that's going on, but you put it all together. So I'd like to get your perspective on what's happening and how you're handling it. Go ahead.
Well, the you know, our September issue of the American Legion magazine is all basically a tribute, a commemorative issue that is all about the 20th anniversary of 9/11 and the identity of the post 9/11 veteran, you know, the longest war, the longest continuous war in America's history. You know, what this unique and very small percentage wise generation of warfighters has been able to accomplish in 20 years, you know, how they've come out of wartime service and where they stand poised to, you know, to enter the kind of the and at the end of the global war on terrorism period, and probably also, I think, relevantly, the post-COVID era. And we started planning this issue long ago, many, many months ago, long before there was even a, you know, a kind of an idea about when our troops were to be moved out of Afghanistan and out of the theater and all that. So, but we really wanted to build a package that would sort of be a statement on memorialize this generation and where they stand uniquely among America's veterans. And of course, we had no idea that then that there would be a date set for the withdrawal of troops, which was I think at one point set at September 11th of 2021. So we and certainly had no idea about anything to do with what the ramifications might be with the Taliban in Afghanistan. And all of this sort of coalesced because the message that our national commander sends in his message in the September issue is, I think, super poignant to the to all of our veterans, every war era, and particularly the Vietnam generation, of which Bill Oxford is one. And you know, his point is that this generation really did some amazing things to prevent future major terrorist strikes on our soil. They took down two, you know, of history's most evil leaders in Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein during this war period. You know, 1,000 years from now, they're going to be writing about Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, and they will reference, you know, how it was that they were removed from power. And that will be the legacy of the post 9/11 generation, as well as to protect our nation from future terrorist attacks. Okay, so all of that is there. And our message the commander's message in September issue, and our message kind of on the website and throughout all of our media right now, is let's welcome home this new generation, because the Vietnam generation, as we all know, did not get the best welcome home in most communities and in most places and by society. And there's everybody likes to compare the Vietnam and the post 9/11 generation. And I think, you know, as well as I do, that the images of the Saigon airlift versus the, you know, what went on in Kabul this last week were pretty jarring, you know, to see the same kind of helicopter removing refugees or trying to extract people out of danger in Afghanistan. There was images of the two pictures of Saigon airlift and Kabul from this week that were just pretty stirring. So there are some similarities, but there are many differences. And we, our message to our members and our and to the post 9/11 generation is that the American Legion is standing ready to help and does help with, I think, most very importantly, sort of digesting what has gone on in Afghanistan in this last couple of weeks. We had one story that Henry Howard, our deputy director, one of our better editors and writers, wrote this week that I thought was really great. It was a American Legion Post in North Carolina conducted a town hall meeting this week, and they brought in, I'd say about 50 veterans of the war in Afghanistan, mostly, and had a town hall session and said, "Hey, let's just talk it out. No politics, no nothing. We're just going to say, hey, look, we're here to support you, to help you understand that we appreciate your service. We appreciate what you were able to accomplish, and we certainly stand ready to help if you're having any, well-being or emotional or psychological effects of the Taliban takeover." And, this is so much in the American Legion's wheelhouse. And we have, again, it's just like we did when the pandemic broke out, we have this buddy check program, which is it's a process that we use to reach out to veterans. And the national commander, I mean, well before this all happened in Afghanistan this last couple of weeks, the commander called on our posts to start making their buddy checks to post 9/11 veterans to get them to understand that we're here to help. And we can be of assistance. We can help you with your understand benefits. We can help you understand healthcare. We can be a shoulder. We can help. And that is kind of the prevailing message that we're delivering now in the magazine, website, social media, local town halls. In the last week, we've had, multiple national media appearances to talk about, what's gone on here and how people are dealing with it. And it is, it strikes us personally in the organization, because we have many Afghanistan veterans on staff, and we're friends and we know each other, and you can kind of sense in their voices that this is a difficult thing for them to fully absorb.
This buddy check that you started, are we seeing the effects? Are people picking up on that and helping out their buddies?
Yeah, it is. It's certainly off and running again, and we have we've made a call out to all of our members, all of our posts. We've got over 12,000 American Legion posts nationwide to kind of condition their messages, because they're doing buddy checks. Like 3,600 last year, posts of our posts did buddy check activities, had a buddy check program, and I think that was based on like June 2020 numbers. I think it's probably doubled by then, and it's probably going to increase more. But the idea is that we get the list of members and non-members, veterans in the community who we know, and we call them, and we don't ask them to do anything. We don't seek out their, it's time to pay your dues or come join us at the event. It's like, hey, how you doing? What can we do for you?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we're working on, and there's a story, like I mentioned, about this from North Carolina, where this post developed what I would call as a model for just basically peer-to-peer conversations with the post 9/11 generation veterans in their communities that say, hey, let's get together and share. And, and we have, as the American Legion, as the years go by, the American Legion is getting more and more post 9/11 generation veterans, not only in membership, but in leadership. And so we feel like that this is kind of a really organic and natural fit for the organization to you know, do grassroots, peer-to-peer, no pressure, veteran-to-veteran communication.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And let me point out, a lot of these vets do not ask for help. They just stay quiet. So it's important that you do that buddy check. Very, very important. You mentioned Vietnam, too. And if you don't mind, I want to kind of pick your brain on this a little bit. The comparisons to Vietnam, I get it with the helicopter and the evacuation, and then there's a lot of animosity out there. What were we doing there for so long? I'm not going to get into all of that. But I want to point out, Vietnam was different for one main thing. There was a draft back then. There was a draft. There was a lot of people that did not want to go, but they were drafted. And with the Iraq, Afghanistan vets, and I like the way you pointed this out, it's a new generation. These were people that were called to service. They saw what happened to the World Trade Towers on 9/11. Yeah. They said, you know what? I got to serve my country. And they signed up. We saw a bunch of people signing up because they wanted to protect America. And I just wanted to point that out. And you know what? I got to take a quick break, but maybe we could continue on that theme in the next segment. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay, Jeff Stouffer joining us on a live line, legion.org for more information, and he's going to talk more about this podcast that is going to reflect on what happened almost 20 years ago. Rich Fiesta will be joining us later in the show from the Alliance for Retired Americans, back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland at 216-881-1802. Call Music Talent of Cleveland as your dependable source for professional musicians in Northeast Ohio. Union musicians add harmony to weddings, elegance to parties, and uplifting music for all events. Music Talent of Cleveland contracts solo and ensemble musicians as well as bands and orchestras for single engagements. So hire union musicians. Call Music Talent of Cleveland today. 216-881-1802.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at BoydWatterson.com.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And you can check us out on 5 different platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, as well as Pandora. When you get an opportunity, just sign up, receive our shows on a regular basis, and give us a rating. We'd appreciate a 5-star rating. We like those 5-star ratings. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org is their website. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Jeff Stouffer on behalf of the American Legion. Been with us, my God, since 2009. I think we started this segment with the Legion. Legion.org for complete updates. And there's a lot going on right now, talking about Afghanistan. And I want to pick up on the comparisons to Vietnam. And there's a lot of people say, why did we bother going there? And I just want to talk about the people that did go there, that were called to action. They were called to protect our country, and you can't talk about that enough. And you reflect on this, Jeff, in the upcoming issue, The New Generation of Veterans, America's Turning Point, and it talks about 9/11. I'd like to get your perspective on this generation. And on top of it, the last year we're in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, there's a lot going on here, right, Jeff?
Yeah. I think that's what really makes this generation, you know, incredibly unique, is it's this all volunteer force. And I keep always remembering, It's the 0.45%. It's not even, they used to say it's the 1%. It's less than 1% who serve in active duty. And it's like they have chosen to defend our nation. And this all began right after 9/11, as you rightly mentioned. People weren't, when 9/11 happened, people were not, the spike in enlistments and the desire by young people to want to go serve their country and defend their country was extremely profound. So I think that they have distinguished themselves historically. You know, in our September magazine, Matthew Amidon, who is the director of the Military Service Initiative at the George W. Bush Institute. The George W. Bush Institute and Syracuse University are two of the leading research incubators on the post-9/11 veteran community. They have amazing information. But Amidon writes the anchor piece in the September issue about how this generation really distinguished itself. You know, there's a couple of key factors that we've got to think about. And that's that they, just like Vietnam, when, you know, people were drafted from every corner of the country, the people who serve today and who served after 9/11 also come from all over the country and even many foreign countries. And we've had many, obviously, foreign nationals. We've made the point that if you were an immigrant and didn't achieve U.S. citizenship, we've been fighting to get fast-track U.S. citizenship for those who've served. And then also, you think about the percentage of women and minorities, both higher than any other time. About 11% of the post-9/11 veteran generation are women. And so it's a very, you know, Amidon brings it, he calls it the post-9/11 veterans are more heterogeneous than any other generation of veterans and are becoming more so with each passing year. It kind of plays to the fact that we have become, you know, a different kind of military, and we have, and it's not just gender-based, and it's not, you know, some past war eras have been very, have been discriminatory. It took a long time for the military to desegregate, and challenging to make that shift. And it wasn't that long ago in our history. But we talk about women and minorities who are not only, growing in percentage and number, but growing in, you know, leadership roles. And, every day we see more and more sort of diversity in the military community. And I think it's so profound about the American identity. And I remember vividly that I think it was a female pilot, a fighter pilot, who was known as the Angel of Death, and the extremists on the other side could not understand what this woman was laying down on them, you know. And this is post 9/11 identity. Wow. You know, we have issues with the post 9/11 veterans have issues and they have concerns. We, as you know, we work really hard, as do you guys, on the concept of getting meaningful employment to them after discharge. It's a big shift going from military service to civilian life after a war, and a war like we've been in. And, you know, we will continue to push to, you know, see the industry makes commitments and investments into the development and retention of, you know, veterans and their families. I think that, like never before, super important point, and it's a point that we made our commander has made, we've been making in our statements, is that the war since 9/11, the global war on terrorism, has really sort of thrown its arms around all family members who are affected, the Blue Star families, the Gold Star families, Blue Star families, Gold Star families, caregivers of those who've come home, severely disabled. We have to remember that, you know, wartime military service is a family, whole family event and effect. So that's one of the reasons that in our town hall meetings and our plans for, you know, engagement, it's not just veteran to veteran per se, but it's also the Legion to family, and the American Legion is an American Legion family, or American Legion Auxiliary, and other associated groups that are part of us, that also to welcome and to engage and to support families. You know, I keep hearing heartbreaking stories and expressions from Gold Star parents right now, who are wondering about the sacrifices that they have made. And it's a difficult situation. And I think it's going to take some, it's a time for healing here. And it's a time for us to communicate with one another. But I just want to, lay out that this package, also, we talk about the transitions and how the post 9/11 veteran is going to be reentering society. And we have another piece that I just want to mention briefly, and that's by Jared Lyon, who is the president and CEO of Student Veterans of America. And I know we've talked about SVA quite a bit before on the show, and I just wanted to note his piece. He has a piece talking about how student veterans are particularly well prepared to lead. And at that time, when we framed the story proposition in the post-COVID economy, now we're talking about in the post-Global War on Terrorism experience as well. So lots of interesting statistics. Veterans, again, have shown, great success in the classroom against the tide of, interestingly, misunderstanding by faculty and administrators on campus and on campus. They're kind of a misunderstood bunch, but they are succeeding and are coming out of college with higher GPAs than non-veteran students. And they're, I think, in a very good position with the maturity and their experiences and their training and their skills to advance the economy and to advance society in the post-COVID era. But that's the piece that Jared Lyon, doesn't it? As we head into the head into the 20th anniversary of 9/11 next month, we have a special Tango Alpha Lima podcast series that I want to mention. We've got 20 stories, 20 episodes leading up to the 20th anniversary of 9/11, and we're dropping a podcast every day right up until 9/11. And some of these stories are so riveting. It's really hard to explain. We have those who were in the Pentagon trying to escape, talking about the scene. Sergeant Major Clifford Lovejoy tells the story about trying to escape from the Pentagon on 9/11. And, we have one that was retired Marine Lieutenant Colonel Darling talking about he spent the day with President Bush and Vice President Cheney as they prepared the U.S. response. On 9/11, he was with them and gives really interesting insights. And we have an EMT from the New York Fire Department. We have another firefighter. We have families. We've got people. We've got a really interesting one that drops later in the month, and that's with Jessica Lynch, who was the POW, female POW who was rescued in Iraq. That one is one that we're all looking forward to rolling out and seeing how the audience responds. But our Tango Alpha Lima podcast team has worked hard to put together this great package to pay tribute to this generation, which I hope that our September issue does some fraction of justice or commemoration or respect and honor to them, because they truly will hold a unique place in history.
Well, I haven't gotten my complete issue yet. I've got some parts that you emailed me, but I'm really, really looking forward to that. A lot of good articles here, and a time in history that we cannot talk enough about, because this was a turning point, and you call it a turning point, and it is a turning point, no doubt about that. Just to get away from that for a minute, I know you wanted to mention the American Legion Baseball World Series. Can you tell us what's going on here? What is that?
To the Idaho Falls Bandits, Idaho Falls, Idaho, it's one of the third time in history that a team from the same American Legion post has won back-to-back championships in the American Legion Baseball World Series. Idaho, interestingly, Pocatello, Idaho played in the very first American Legion Baseball World Series back in like 1926. Uh-huh. And then never has won. And they never had won until 2019 when Idaho Falls won it. And then that we had COVID last year and didn't get to have the World Series. And then this year they came back, went and beat a tough team from Honolulu, Hawaii, to win the national championship in Shelby, North Carolina, just this last week. And what's interesting about that team, it sounds like, well, they must have returned all their starters. They returned one. So that's a program that really, I think, has deserves a nod. Also, this week we take off on our American Legion Writers Legacy Run to raise funds for college scholarships for the children of post 9/11 veterans and military personnel who were either killed in action after 9/11 and or became 50% or greater disabled, service connected disabled. So we help, we assist, we provide college education funds for the children of those veterans and those who've fallen. And that is what this whole legacy run is all about. They take off from Arkansas this week, and they take a meandering route to Phoenix, Arizona, where the American Legion National Convention, 102nd National Convention, takes up really next week. So I'll be in Phoenix for that from Wednesday through the following Friday, and we'll be very interested to see how it all unfolds, especially in the milieu of the moment with what's going on in Afghanistan. But you can guarantee that our primary message is to let the post 9/11 generation veterans understand, know that the American Legion stands ready to support them, understand in ways that government agency may or may not be able to provide that kind of understanding. It's veteran to veteran. We're looking forward to our national convention. You know, last year we didn't have it because of COVID. So this is a big resumption of normal life as much as we can get there. It's a little bit scaled back for obvious reasons. There's no parade. A few of the more organic social activities have been kind of dialed back. And we're closely following the restrictions that the city of Phoenix have placed for public safety.
Well, Jeff, you got a lot going on. Get some rest after all of this, okay?
All right.
You got a lot on your plate, buddy.
I appreciate you and the show, and thank you so much for letting us share.
You got it. Once again, Jeff Stopher of the American Legion magazine, legion.org for more information. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Rich Fiesta on behalf of the Alliance for Retired Americans.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you were exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And of course, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and that's our Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the North Coast Area Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Let's go to line number two. Welcome one of our regulars, Mr. Rich Fiesta, Executive Director of the Alliance for Retired Americans. Website, real simple, retiredamericans.org. Rich, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today, buddy?
Doing fine, Flash. Great to be with you again.
I know you want to talk about lowering drug prices and allowing Medicare to negotiate, but before we do that, I know you worked in the same building as Rich Trumka, and I'll tell you, it's hard to believe that he's gone. I mean, he was young, 72, just celebrated his 72nd birthday on vacation with his family, and he dies of a massive heart attack. And I'm just wondering, since you were close to him, maybe you can share a story or two with our listeners. Go ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Flash. As you mentioned, it's very hard to comprehend. Labor lost its best in public voice. Personally, I first met Rich Trumka a number of years ago when I was a first-year law student looking for a summer job in Washington and interned for my local congressman from Pennsylvania. And of course, mining is important statewide. And one of their staff said, "We have this bright young lawyer who's on our staff. Why don't you come down and meet with him?" We did, the two of them. We just went to a local sandwich shop, and I ordered a sandwich and a Coke. And Rich just kind of looked at me in a very quiet voice and said, "Coke is non-union in D.C." So I enjoyed iced tea with my lunch that day.
Yeah, that would definitely be Rich Trumka. Great story. Thanks for sharing that little tidbit with Rich Trumka, who passed away just over 2 weeks ago. All right, let's get into these drug prices. And boy, you and I have had many conversations, and I still, for the life of me, can't figure out why they can't negotiate Medicare Part D. I know the pharmaceuticals are a big lobby group and all that, but are we making any progress on that? Because if you do the polling, which you did, a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, there's got to be some negotiations going on, right?
Yeah, this is a 17-year-old fight, Flash, of allowing Medicare to negotiate for prescription drug prices that we're right knocking at the door to fix it. As you mentioned, we at the Alliance did a poll on this with Lake Research. We released a couple weeks ago. It's on our website, retiredamericans.org. And this is what the American people want, regardless of party, regardless of race, gender. It is bipartisan, multipartisan, nonpartisan, whatever you want to think. But people want better drug prices at the pharmacy counter, and the way to get that is through allowing Medicare to negotiate and use that power for better prices, not only for people on Medicare, but it'll be for people throughout the economy.
And just running down those numbers, 87% of those over 65 favor allowing Medicare to negotiate drug prices. That includes 48% who are strongly in favor. Among Democratic seniors, 89% are in favor, and 87% of Republican seniors. And independents, it's 81%. So the bottom line is, it's across the board politically. So, my question, that being said, what's being done about that? Is anybody picking this up in Congress?
Yes, and more importantly, in the White House as well. I mean, President Biden gave a speech devoted to prescription drug prices last week, and now we have a White House that's engaged personally. It's just not rhetorical. It is in the budget blueprint that the Senate passed a couple weeks ago. All the budget reconciliation process has to be done by September 25th, so a month from now we can finally, hopefully, be on the path to allow Medicare to negotiate for drugs and hopefully, again, soon have lower prices at the pharmacy counter.
What are you hearing from the pharmaceuticals? They have to know that this is on the horizon, right?
Right. Well, if you watch almost any kind of political show, and a lot during the Olympics, they are spending literally millions of dollars on deceiving ads saying it's going to take drugs away from people and we can't do any more research, you know, et cetera, et cetera. The same ads they've used for the last 17 years. And our polling has found that those ads just don't work on people. People see through this. They know Americans pay the highest drug prices in the world. And we're right knocking at the door to change all of that.
Okay, let's pick up on the research part. Isn't most of the research done by our own government, which means you and I as taxpayers are funding that research? Isn't that true, Rich?
Yes, most of the basic drug innovation is through our tax dollars, through the National Institutes of Health and other government health agencies, oftentimes then given out in grants to universities, institutes, sometimes pharmaceutical companies. This is what we saw with the COVID vaccines, for example. But that's where the basic funding starts, with your and my tax dollars as well. And then great patent protections are given, some of the most generous to pharmaceutical corporations in the world, and that's how we find the state of drug prices where they are in this country.
All right, the other issue I want to get into is capping the amount that Medicare beneficiaries must spend out of pocket each year. I don't know where it is right now. Can you fill in some details on this, Rich?
Yeah, right now, if you need some expensive drugs and all, you're paying a copay. So you're going to pay over time if you need some high-cost drugs a lot of money. So there is right now in this budget process somewhere to cap your out-of-pocket costs. Remember, we had this infamous donut hole where you paid everything and then you went into catastrophic if you're under Medicare. That's irrational. Donut hole's been closed. But this is a way to cap it. We're looking for a line somewhere. Might be a couple thousand dollars, but that's better than many thousands of dollars, which is the state of affairs we're in now.
Rich, the other issue that you and I have talked about many, many times is Social Security. And I'm just wondering, with this Congress and this president in office right now, there is an opportunity to more or less strengthen Social Security, much like what was done back in the 80s when Reagan was in office. What's the latest on that? Is anybody talking about that right now?
That's on a parallel track to look at expanding and strengthening Social Security. August 14th, Social Security just celebrated its 86th birthday, has never missed a payment through good times and bad. There are a number of bills in Congress, Senator Sanders in the Senate, Congressman John Larson in the House, have bills that would, over time, scrap the cap, either totally or partially, increase benefits, give a COLA that's more reflective of what seniors spend their money on in their daily lives as well. So there's been a lot of hearings. We're hopeful that maybe this year we can see some of the bills start to move through committee. But there's much more momentum for Social Security expansion now than there's been since, oh, I'd say in the last 10 to 15 years at a minimum.
So you're feeling pretty good about that issue moving forward then, I take it?
At some point, yes. Hopefully we can see maybe this fall some of the committees in Congress to start moving some of the legislation that's been introduced. At least that's what the sponsor's plan is as of right now.
Very good. Yeah. Strike while the iron's hot, you know. That's what I say. How's the Alliance doing? Are you picking up more members? Are you still around, 4 million members around the country?
Yeah, the alliances last year, we've increased our skills because of the pandemic. We have a lot more of our retirees now who are much more computer literate and communication literate, using various calls now on the screen rather than in person. It's been a great way for us to lobby members of Congress and other elected officials. We're seeing a lot of our attendance pick up using this way, and hopefully, knock on wood, we can get to a point in the next year or so we can go back to in-person meetings, state conventions and all, but we haven't missed a beat, and we're looking forward to doing more great things.
I love it. All right, let's drive people to the website. It's retiredamericans.org, retiredamericans.org. They're also on Facebook, and you can follow them on Twitter, Active Retirees. Active, keyword is active on that one. Rich, you take care, my brother. We'll talk to you next month, all right?
Thanks, Flash. Great being with you, as always.
And that's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, the latest from the United Association and the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.